The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I know it's spring break week around here, and no one else is doing shows except for Ken and I. Shout out to my buddy Ken. I came walking or driving in this morning, and we talked about how glass is off, having a great time. Most of the town's gone. I was at the Iron Pit Gym this morning, and there were five people there, so it's kind of nice to have peace and quiet. Got my bass boats out of retirement last night from the storage facility, and getting those all ready to rock and roll for the spring. Even with some cold weather coming, I'm fine. I just want to get it ready so when the time is right, I can go, Hughes, let's do some crappie fishing tonight, exactly. And you can be at my house in just a couple minutes.
And then we can just take off and be right on it.
Even if we're there an hour or two, absolutely. We're on it. It's a good release for everybody. Of course, hear Doug Hughes' voice right there. Doug's going to be taking the reins next week when I'll be out of town. What's your program going to be next week?
Well, you know, David, I am a no-trick pony. I mean, I've got the same old thing. I do the J.P. Morgan Guide to Retirement every year, at least a couple times on the show, and so the new one just came out about a week ago, so I've printed it off and started doing some notes and getting some ideas together for what's going on.
It's always really insightful, so if you get a chance, folks, listen, of course, Thursday night, Saturday mornings at 9, always on WGCLRadio.com. Let's talk a little bit about last week, but before we do, let's give a shout-out to Kenny Bland Auctions. They want to be your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And Lance Like of the Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Let's talk about last week. Stocks were down for the week last week as investors appeared to take some profits and traders kind of paused as Fed Chairman Powell had some congressional testimony. Stocks had a rough week, start to the week at least, with the Dow and the S&P and NASDAQ each off more than 1% on Tuesday alone. Mega cap tech stocks, which have been under a little bit of pressure as investors appear to be taking profits after the incredible climb they've had. Now, the markets did claw back much of their losses on Wednesday and Thursday, with the Fed Chair's upbeat comments to the Senate Banking Committee boosting stocks. Chairman Powell said that once the Fed was confident inflation was tracking sustainably at 2%, the Fed would consider cutting short-term interest rates. The S&P and the NASDAQ both rallied, with the S&P hitting a record close. Friday's employment news threw some uncertainty into the mix. The economy added 275,000 jobs in February. That exceeded the nearly 198 that was expected, but wage growth slowed. Jobless claims edged up, and some saw that as a negative, while others viewed it as that Goldilocks moment where it's just not too hot and not too cold, and then stocks initially rallied on that news, but then profit-taking appeared to have arrived as the day went on. Productivity, that's the big watch. Productivity is one of the critical data points the Fed views to determine its next steps with monetary policy. Producing more goods or services with fewer resources helps the economy grow while managing inflation risk. Of course, that's where the big AI push has come from. Everyone in the world believes the AI, which I am in that camp as well, will increase and has increased productivity and will continue to do so. Now, here we are this week. The Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, March 13th. Inflation edges up, hits 3.2%. Consumer prices rose 3.2% in February from a year earlier. That's a slight uptick. Economists expected 3.1%. Producer price index came out on this Thursday at double what expectations were. I expected this morning when I saw that data come out, the market would sell off. It was actually up in pre-market, and then I thought it would sell off, and it did a little bit. But as of me recording this show, I'm looking at some data here, and it's not terrible. It's really It's interesting because the market is like holding on to this thing, man. It's not, we're not going to have to raise rates. And I don't think we will, but I do think we're going to be higher for longer. Have you heard that before on the show? Kind of like rinse and repeat over and over and over. In fact, there are some things going on in the world that gives you kind of that Goldilocks moment. Boeing, as an example, puts airline plans in flux. Carriers are cutting flights as airplane maker delivers fewer jets. Boeing's problems are rippling across U.S. Airline industry and really the world. Airlines are cutting back on flying and tempering plans to hire pilots and flight attendants as they prepare to receive fewer Boeing planes than they had planned at the start of the year. Southwest Airlines said Tuesday it would cut flight capacity and reevaluate its financial guidance, citing lower than expected deliveries of Boeing jets. So there's a lot of stuff going on, but a big shout out to my buddy Andy Bradley for getting typed in at American Airlines this past week, a move from Republic. He's a sprint car driver and with his brother Scotty down at Hoosier Speed, and I've, of course, been sponsoring their sprint cars the last couple of years. That's the 2025, the final drive. Very proud sponsor, and occasionally I'll make an appearance down at the race shop just to see how things are going. They're working on Chase Briscoe cars right now, so it's kind of a fun place to hang out for a little bit of a time. You don't want to be there too often, otherwise they may throw a wrench in your hand. Doug, we're going to come back. Listening to the show, I posed the question, what do you do to protect yourself from inflation? Not just protect, but win. When I come back, we're going to relive these moments that I talked about, let's say 2 years ago. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house. Doug will be taking the reins next week as he does the Guide to the Markets put out by J.P. Morgan Chase. It's really a great piece. It'll handle everything that you want to know. He's not going to get into the weeds on things that don't really matter or that he doesn't think you need to necessarily focus on, but he always does a great job. I'll be heading out west for a couple of days, but then I'll be back Monday. I'm just leaving on Wednesday afternoon, so I have a full day Monday, full day Tuesday, full half a day on Wednesday, then I'm out for Thursday and Friday. What do you think I'm doing? Watching some basketball like everybody else. That's when productivity goes down greatly, right, Doug?
Well,
checking
can,
their
yes.
brackets. Exactly. I'm hoping that Ryan gets our brackets ready.
Haven't seen him yet.
Well, he is on spring break, yeah. I think.
Okay.
And I think. I haven't seen much of him. I'm assuming he is. And he's always been in charge of the brackets. So as soon as the brackets are announced on Sunday night, I'm sure we'll have the email hit from CBS Sports, and then we all fill out our brackets for fun, of course, entertainment purposes only.
Yes.
And then we harass each other for the next, several weeks to see who wins. It's always the person who knows nothing about basketball that typically is right
exactly
up there.
Exactly right, yeah. They do the research, which one, and then those of us, or others, not me, but that think they know something about a player or a team or something that's going on, they always get beat.
They always get beat. They're always down at the bottom.
Yeah.
All right, let me relive a couple things for you folks. Remember when we were running rampant with inflation, it was 8-9%, and everyone was freaking out, and the word transient kept coming around, like, this is just temporary. And I kept saying, well, it depends what you define as temporary. If you look back in history and say, yeah, it was really hot for maybe 4 or 5 years, you could say that was temporary in the big scheme of things, but it wasn't going to be temporary for, a year or two. You can't put an extra, $3-4 trillion into the economy and expect for it to be temporary. So this was much expected. But I remember telling people, what do? You own things that go up with inflation. What is that? Stocks, real estate, gold. You own things. What do you not own? Things that have a fixed interest rate, unless it's high enough to hedge inflation. But even if you were earning 5 on a bond at the time and inflation was running 7 or 9, you were losing 2 or 3. It's the real rate of return over time. I remember being at my buddy George's daughter's wedding, their son's wedding it was, and inflation had just clocked in at almost 10%. And the investments were down as well. So I remember asking me, hey, Hayes, if my investments are down 10% and inflation is 8%, am I really down 18%? My short answer is yes. But the long answer is stay in there when you're in there. Because when you're in there, you're in there. That's an old softball saying. Back when when I came back from Greenville, started playing softball with my buddies, and we had a great team. But we had this old saying, when you're in there, get in there. So when you're in there, you're in there. So stay in there, and it works. It works in sports. It works in work. It works in life. It works in relationships. It works in the stock market. When you're in there, get in there. So when you're in there, get in there. Doug, that's what we were telling people 2 years ago. Absolutely. You got to buy things that go up with inflation, not things that go down when you have inflation.
Absolutely. And I was reminded of the old Andrew Carnegie saying, gentlemen prefer bonds. Well, that sounded good when he wrote that back in the 40s. And then, you know, it was great from the 80s or from 82 to 2022. But what people tend to forget, David, is that when we talk about inflation interest rates, we always think about 1982 to 2022, 40 years, unprecedented, never seen, 40 years of declines. No one talks about 1965 to 1980, 81, and 82. And that might be the environment we're in now, where interest rates didn't dramatically go up. We're all right now wondering about quick rate, all this.
Right.
But interest rates grinded higher and higher over 15, 20 years, and then had 40 years to go the other way. And so when we talk about inflation, we talk about bonds, different things like that. If we are in an environment now where interest rates stay high or just grind gradually higher over long periods of time, you want to be owning, not loaning.
And the Fed is a driver of that, but it's not the only driver of that. I mean, when the Fed is only controlling the overnight borrowing rate between banks and in federal financial institutions, look at the 10-year treasury. I just had it here. Was it 4.1, 4.2%, something like that? Let me look. I have the number right here. It was 4.09 last week. So that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. And what Doug's saying is these rates could grind higher for longer.
And it may take, right. It might be slow. It might be slow. Nobody talks about how we got to that place in 1982, how long it took to get there. But we talk about the long, long, you know, bond unwinding, so to speak, or interest rate declines for 40 years. But it was a slow grind north. And I'm not predicting this. I'm just saying when you look at risk, you have to think of everything that's on the table, and that's one of them.
Well, when I did tell him that at that wedding table that evening over a glass of wine, you got to stay in there when mm-hmm. you're in there. Well, he did that, and he didn't just protect himself, but he's winning right now. You have to own things, like Doug said, that go up with inflation. You need to do things that protect you, too. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit on an all-weather portfolio. There's always a place for bonds in most portfolios, always a place for some bonds. We're not saying don't own bonds. But I found it interesting. We, you know, talked about Japan for years and years and years. And how Japan, it took them 40 years to get their market back to even. They had low interest rates for, you know, 30-some years. And everyone always said, oh, rates have to go up. They have to go up. They have to go up. And I'm like, no, they don't have to go up. And even on this show for the U.S., I said, no, they don't have to go up. And now we're saying, well, they don't have to go down. I'm not saying they're going to not go down at some point. But just because everyone says it's going to happen doesn't mean it's going to happen. Really, if you look at Japan, what an incredible story that is than what we can relate to, as they are a little bit older than U.S., you know, they don't have a lot of immigration going on in Japan. Their interest rates have been low forever. They're starting to tick up a little bit. And believe it or not, folks, their stock market is finally back to where it was many, many years ago.
The Nikkei 225 outperformed the S&P 500 last year and is outperforming this year. But just a few weeks after Japanese stocks broke a three-decade high. It just did this a couple weeks ago. The country's financial markets are hurtling toward another phenomenon not seen in the best part of a generation, David, rising interest rates.
Yep.
Bankers are attending remedial classes on what to do when rates move.
And no one's been there before.
Trading rooms are setting up for more bond derivative markets to spring to life, as they have begun to do. The symbolism is also heavy as Japan seeks to leave behind lost years marked by deflation mm-hmm. and reawaken the fourth biggest economy in the world as a destination for investment.
And it was number two behind us for many years.
A change already rippling through corporate Japan and global markets. Kita Masuda said, I personally think this is going to be the beginning of a new era. It's a fundamental shift in the people's mindset, one that may take 5 or 10 years as the economy changes. And you know, David, as we had our friend Julian on, and he was talking about sovereigns and who are going to be buying U.S. bonds, and we've seen that retraction from foreign Japan and China from buying our U.S. bonds. The last part of this article says that should a bigger policy shift drive long-term rates up sharply. Japanese investors who own some $2.2 trillion in foreign debt might also lose their appetite in favor of paper closer to home, which would drag down the global bond markets. So we're beginning to see it happen.
It's kind of interesting.
They're awakening out of this.
Julian just said this is something that that could happen, that probably will happen. And
he said that in an interview first in October, and we had him on in January. He was saying the same thing. Huh. And here we are. It's going on.
Well, here's the thing. You do have to do things to protect yourself. When it comes back, when I come back, let's talk about what an all-weather portfolio looks like that really we came up with back in the 90s that really honestly still stands today. Doug and I will talk about that when we come back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house, and Doug, I'm going to let you go because I know you're busy and couldn't hang around for the entire show, which is fine. I knew that coming in. Next week, Doug will be live in studio Thursday doing the Guide to the Markets.
Guide to Retirement, actually. Yeah.
Oh, Guide to Retirement. That one's – I love that one. The Guide to the Markets is great.
Yes, but the Guide to Retirement is a whole other level, whole different set of information.
Any guests next week and drag Hot Rod in or Wayne or Ryan or somebody?
Yeah, I'll probably have Hot Rod come in. I may see if I can get Wayne to do Social Security, but it's also the Big Ten – or no, I'm sorry, it's March Madness.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know who will be available. Well, it's me doing the show.
Well, and this does air during prime basketball time. Yes. So if you miss any of it, you can always catch it on your area where you get your favorite podcast as well. So, Doug, we'll be talking to you later. I'm going to talk about all weather portfolios.
Sounds great.
Man, take off. All right, guys, for a long time, you know, we would say, you know, you need to own stocks. You need to own bonds. You need to own real estate. You need to have some cash. And that – and. You know, when you think about it, is that the perfect portfolio? Yeah, sure, in a variety of percentages it is. I still believe that's true. It doesn't have to all be in your 401k or IRA to use stocks. You can have publicly traded stocks. You can have non-traded stocks. Maybe you're in an ESOP or some other private company. You can own publicly traded real estate investment trust, or you can own a farm or some rental homes. Just understanding that the trade-off of owning publicly traded versus non-traded is liquidity for volatility. Let me say that again. The trade-off of owning publicly traded versus non-traded is liquidity for volatility. I think it's commonly known in this listening audience that I love real estate. I own a lot of real estate around town, from offices to warehouse, single family to student apartments and a few other things in between. Now, here's how it works. We write down what I paid for them. We estimate what it's worth based on an income or comp approach, and that's its value, and that's what I use for financial statements. Does that change all the time? Well, it might, but honestly, not really. On my financial statement, it says this is what you paid for it, this is what you say it's worth, this is what it's rented for, and it doesn't really change. If I want to sell something, I would determine a price and see what I can get. I hold on to it. I hold on to it until the right buyer comes along, and we make a deal. Normally, it's pretty close to what I valued it at. Then, if a person buying is financing it, they have to have it appraised. Things are worth what people are willing to pay, but that's a non-traded asset. So I'm not watching the volatility every day and what that's worth. Is it going up and down? Sure. One day someone might pay me this, the next day they might pay me that. But you're trading liquidity for non-traded for volatility. So here's the other thing. So the appraiser has our deal as the base, and then they look around at comps to see if it's reasonable. If it is, they normally value it at the offer price versus me pressing a button at a value that's on the screen driving and just boom, immediately get it based on market conditions. It might take me 6 months to get a price I want and close the deal versus having the trade go off in seconds and the money in my bank in 3 days. So that's the trade-off. Once again, the trade-off of owning publicly traded versus non-traded is liquidity for volatility. So is it okay to have some non-traded things that aren't immediately liquid? Here's the thing. You should have stuff that's liquid immediately, money in the bank, stuff that you should be able to get in 3 days. Maybe it's stuff you can get to in 3 months. And maybe some stuff you can't get to for 3 to 5 years. liquidity is a portfolio issue, not an individual issue. So I look at my whole portfolio. Could I come up with some money, you know, to go on vacation next week if I wanted to? Sure. Could I go out and do something incredibly absurd that would cost millions of dollars? No, I need some time to come up with that. You know, those are the things you have to think about. I have a buddy that said, I only really like to invest in land. And I'm like, why? Why do you only like to invest in land? Well, they're not making any more of it. Well, I can tell you this, folks. When I came home from Florida last weekend, I flew over a lot of land out there that hasn't really been utilized. Now, it could have been swampland. I don't know. But you have to understand, when you own land, where is it? What is its purpose? Are we making any more like downtown Bloomington property? No, it's just like everywhere else. But I just talked to someone who's buying 25 acres between Williams and Nowhere. Williams, Indiana, and Nowhere. Actually, between Williams and French Lick. So that's not Nowhere. It's a great place to go. And there's a lot of that around. So I asked him, hey, if you bought something for $1 million, trying to bring this all back home. If you bought something for $1 million and you sold it for $2 million 10 years from now, would that make you happy? His answer was, heck yeah. I said, well, did you know that's a 7.2% rate of return on your money? And you can get that in the stock market too, and maybe more. He said, yeah, but then I'd have to watch the ups and downs and all arounds all the time, and that'd drive me nuts. I just drive by, take my side-by-sides out with my grandkids, drive around the property. It's a heck of a lot stressful. It's kind of hard to argue, isn't it? So when you think about an all-weather portfolio, think about it in a couple ways. Number one, market liquidity. 40% market liquidity, 30%, and that's going to be in your stock market, 30% bonds, and maybe 30% some kind of protected strategy. Now let's talk protected. What does that mean? Maybe it's the 100 acres my buddy talked about. His property could go down too, but by how much? 10% over the next 6 years? 15%? I mean, maybe. Although maybe unlikely, he wouldn't sell it for that. I can guarantee he'll keep holding on until he gets the price he wants. So there's a newer product asset class out there called a registered, and we've talked about this on the show, but I wanted to actually focus on a little bit more because it's been so widely used. And it's being called an asset class. You know, I've always thought of stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, cash. That's kind of your main asset classes, and everyone's sort of pivoted in between. But then what about products? Like some people call life insurance cash value or life insurance death benefits an asset class. Sure, that could be an asset class. What about a registered index-linked annuity, or RILA for short? All right, so I ran out of time in this segment. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about some of these protected strategies that I think you need to know about. It has become one of the fastest-growing newer asset classes, if that's what you want to call it. You could call it a product. You could call it an asset class. It doesn't really matter. It's not what it is. It's what it does. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everybody. It's Your Money with David Hayes, flying solo here with Dr. Hughes hitting the road. He will be here in the hot seat on Thursday next week to talk about the retirement guide to the markets given to him by J.P. Morgan Chase. It's good, going to be a good show. You know, potentially I could call in on that Thursday. I'll be on West Coast time, and that would be, I don't know, whatever time it is. It doesn't matter. But we may just let it go and let me take a break from the show for a week and let those guys take it from there because it's going to be a great show. I might just get in the way if I actually call in. All right, so a lot of people, even in my office, talk about a third, a third, a third. A third in straight up all on stock market go, a third in bonds, and then a third in a protected strategy of some type. I'm going with the 40-30-30 approach. Why? Well, by having 40% in liquid stocks, 30% in bonds, keep in mind, guys, this is a 70-30 portfolio potentially, and 30% in a protected strategy. If you actually looked at optimizing risk in return chart, which is saying where do I get the best return with the least amount of risk on a historical basis based on modern portfolio theory, they have a slightly better outcome than a traditional 60-40 mix of stocks and bonds, but with less risk. And that's what we're all about. How do I get the best return with the least amount of risk? Everyone wants that, right? Well, here's how it works. it's a buffer on the downside. And if you've listened to the show, we have talked about this with Rod. I've talked about these types of products before, but I've never spent a lot of time on it. So I thought I'd spend a little more time on it, especially where the market is today. You know, the market in some areas, not all areas, but certain areas, especially in the mega tech, is really priced for perfection. It's priced so that the things that they expect to happen is going to happen. And when they don't happen, it can fall. And it can fall somewhat drastically and quickly. It's like falling knives. You know, it goes up kind of slowly, not really slowly in some of these cases, but, you know, and then it drops really fast. So everyone wants this. Best return, least amount of risk. Here's how it works on the buffer side. Limited on the upside as well. For everything you get, you give something up. When it comes to a fully traded public security, like an exchange-traded fund, you can buy and sell all the time. And Rod has discussed these here on the show. But here's a quick overview of one of the strategies. You buy something and it says, okay, the first 15% that's down, you don't lose that if it goes down. If it goes down 20, you take 5. This is one of many versions. But if the market goes up 12 or more, up to 12, you get it. Anything more than 12, you don't get. So what happens when you have a 25 or 30% year, you get 12. What happens if the market drop 18? Well, you take the difference between 15 and 18. That's what you lost, 3. But having a piece like that in the portfolio typically makes a difference in managing the risk. I think everyone would say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, what about these RILAs, the Registered Index Linked Annuities? They're issued by insurance companies. There's all different types of them. Some have fees. Some don't have fees. You get a little more upside if you pay a fee. You have things like performance rate triggers. So if the market's up at all, flat or up, you get a certain interest rate. There's inverse triggers where you make money if the market's up or down. And some different enhanced strategies. I've used one recently that gives you 140% of the S&P 500, but it's on a 6-year contract with a 15% downside protection. Don't ask how they do it. That's not what this show's about. If you want to know how they do it, become, I don't know. I can explain how they do it, but I don't want to do it here on the show. But 140% of the S&P on a 6-year contract, point to point, with 15% downside protection. I'll go back to the farm example in just a second here. So these RILAs are registered products, and they offer through registered investment people or broker-dealers. So they'll determine if this is kind of a suitable thing for you or not before you should go forward with the recommendation. So let's go back to the farm example. Let's say that my buddy, I'm like, hey, you bought it for $1 million. What happens in 10 years if not $2 million, but you get an extra 40% on top of that of what you made, another $400,000. But if your farm value did go down 15%, it's still worth what you paid, $1 million, guaranteed by the insurance company, backed by the insurance company. Would he say that's a pretty good deal? Well, that's what this is, but here's the thing. You got to hold on to it for 6 years. The ones that Rod and I talked about are things you can trade all the time. You have some downside, but you have limited upside. Some of these have enhanced upsides and still limited downsides, or I shouldn't say limited downside. You have a defined protection strategy, whether it's on the first 15 or last 15 or first 5 and last 25. They're all over the place. And mix and matching usually makes sense. You know, why would you not consider that? But again, these are registered products. You're not going to be able to jump online and buy them, as far as I know. Someone might say, yeah, I've been able to do that, but I haven't seen it. So these investment people have to determine, number one, is it suitable for you to have something quasi-locked up for 6 years, number one. Is it a certain percentage of your overall net worth? Because, again, you need to have some liquidity. And then they'll determine if it's suitable for you, and you guys can just discuss it, and if it's good, you go with it. Now, if you'd like to know more about this, let us know. We'll send you some info about it, explaining how it works. And if you want to have a conversation with one of my guys about it, just let us know. We'll make it happen. You guys know how to get hold of us. Go to cfci.us, contact us. Said Hayes was talking about this thing that gives me this and gives me that. We'll hook you up with somebody. I always say, folks, you know, where we are today, my saying of you never know how much risk you can take until you've taken too much is never more true than it is today. So this is a way for you to think about buffering some, if not all, of the worry away. Does it make sense to make an all-weather portfolio, but still giving you opportunity to make maybe even more than you could make in the market? Hey, let's be full on with a piece, because I have to be able to keep this piece around for 6 years for me to get that enhanced return. That one, by the way, just so you know, in full disclosure, I think the fee on that one was 1.25%. So it's kind of like, okay, are we willing to pay 1.25% to get 40% of the S&P above the S&P and 15% downside? It's just, you know, you're paying for the enhancements, you're paying for the insurance. Yeah, I mean, it's up to you, but I think it's a pretty good trade-off. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, it's tax time, of course. Maybe you've done them, maybe you haven't, but you aren't planning right now. You're preparing. You're writing a history lesson on what did happen. Now is the time to look forward through the windshield. I'm going to go through a couple of key planning strategies that might help you plan your tax bill for next year and years down the road. All right, I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It is tax time. Here we are in the middle of March. For many of you that have investments that are not inside of retirement accounts, you're just now getting your tax documents and just now getting ready to prepare your taxes. So this message may be a little bit early, but I don't think so. Here's the thing. I mean, when you do your taxes, what are you doing? You're just reporting what happened, not what you think will happen in the upcoming year. This is the time of year you need to be doing something about it, looking through the windshield, not the rearview mirror. So I thought I'd take some time and talk about just a few planning strategies that you've heard me talk about before that can help you plan your tax bill for this year, coming, you know, this 2024 year, payable next year in 2025, and really into the future as well. You know, the first thing I'm always like, I look at someone's taxes, how many reportable capital gains and dividends do you have? Well, it's like, wouldn't those be better off, these massive reportable gains inside of a tax-sheltered account? Like an IRA or Roth IRA, and what accounts should I have that are held outside? Well, those are ones that you definitely want reporting capital gains or qualified dividends, because those are treated differently than ordinary income. So you look at that and say, these could probably go here, these should probably go there, and create a better tax situation for this upcoming year. Maxing out your qualified charitable distributions. So I'm over 70 and a half, and I want to make sure that I give money directly to the charity from my IRA. There's no other way to give it, folks. There's no other way to give it. Unless you have highly appreciated stock and you want to lay that stock off to a charity, you know, get the full deduction if you're itemizing. If you're not itemizing, it doesn't make any difference what you give away except for the savings on the capital gains when you lay it off. If I'm laying off a highly appreciated security, I want to be able to lay it off to avoid the capital gain and be able to itemize my deductions that year. But here's the thing. Qualified charitable distributions. Comes out of the IRA, you must be 70 and a half. Will you be 70 and a half this year? Well, you should probably wait to do your contributions until you are. Because it's not the year you turn 70 and a half. It's when you're 70 and a half. It's similar to 59 and a half. It's not the year I turn 59 and a half. It's when I'm 59 and a half, I can access my retirement accounts with no penalty. I'm going to throw another one at you, and this is just because I just thought of it. The rule of 55 is different. The rule of 55 says if I terminate in the year I turn 55, then I can access my money from my 401ks, 403bs, 401a, whatever, my company-sponsored plans without a penalty. See how confusing this stuff is? But please, if you're going to turn 70 and a half, let's say in July, and you give your church or charity some money, just let them know, hey, I'm not going to be giving until the summertime when I turn 70 and a half. The money comes out of the IRA. This is traditional. You don't want to do it from your Roth, although you can, which is silly. You want to give it from traditional IRA. It comes out of your IRA directly to the charity. It doesn't have to go to them, but it needs to be payable to them. You can hand it to them. It's completely tax-free, and if you're just now turning 70 and a half, you're not subject to required distributions now until you're 73. But when you get to 73, when you do the qualified charitable distribution, and you should always do this all the way up until you're dead, then that will go to satisfying your required distributions. Okay, so let's say you're still working. Max out these retirement plans, right? If you're able to, and I think most of you probably should and probably are. We have new increased limitations. I think Wayne went through this not long ago. But now you can put $23,000 away into your 401ks. And if you're over 50 like me, you can put an extra $7,500. That's over $30,000 a year you can now put away. And this is the year, 2024, where if you want your employer money that's being matched to go into the Roth, that's an option. Now, is your plan set up for that yet? I don't know. My guess is not everybody, but I do know a company that's using Fidelity is working on that, getting that kind of set up so that if an employee said, yeah, I'm putting all my money into a Roth, because I've been listening to Hayes talk about this now for years, and I don't want to pay the tax in the future, I'll pay it off now. But I also want the money the employer is putting in to go into the Roth. This is the year that that can happen. But you want to max these things out, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, 457s, whatever it might be, max them out because this is the time to do it. Also, keep in mind that we have the Indiana 529 college choice plans. That limit that you can get a tax credit on went up from $5,000 to $7,500. So you would get 20% of $7,500 or a max credit of $1,500 for that year. That goes directly to the bottom line of taking your taxes lower in this year. So that's one way. So let's talk about another thing. Let's say you own an annuity and you're like, you know what, this thing stinks. The rates were low when I bought it, the whatever it might be. And you're like, I need to get out of this thing. I just met with someone this morning that literally put $40,000 away when he was 30 years old. He just turned 60. The thing's worth $460,000, and it's an annuity, a variable annuity. That didn't seem too bad to me, but he had $360,000 worth of gain. And we were like, you know what? This is an older annuity, and there's a lot of new ones that have, you know, bells and whistles or things like that that might benefit you now at 60 to 65 than you did when you were 30, which I really don't know why a 30-year-old put money into an annuity in the first place, but he did, and here we sit today. So there is a way to tax-free exchange all that gain into another annuity. So let's say you have an old costly variable annuity or low-paying fixed annuity with deferred gains like my buddy. You can swap it. It's called a 1035 tax-free exchange, and then set yourself up for maybe a better outcome. And then lastly, I'll say this because there's so much more I could talk about. You've got to do those Roth conversions. You just did your taxes. What kind of capacity did you leave on the table? What kind of capacity at 12? What kind of capacity at 22? What kind of capacity did you leave? Meaning I could have recognized more income. Well, now's the time to think about it. Look forward. And this is where I think doing what I said first, in saying, where did these capital gains come from? Well, it came from all these mutual funds. And I don't know what the mutual fund gains will be this year. Well, this is a great time to shift what you have in mutual funds to an area that if they recognize a bunch of gains, phantom gains we call them, you don't have to worry about it. And start focusing on the long-term aspect of tax planning. Now I say, okay, now I kind of have a pretty good feel for what I'm going to owe in taxes this year. I have this much available, $80,000, $120,000, $200,000. I don't know, whatever it is, to move from taxable forever to tax-free forever, moving money from a traditional IRA or 401k into a Roth. Folks, we have this year, next year, and then it's over, as far as I know, although I will say there's some grumblings of a few things that might continue on, which I'll be the first to tell you when that happens. So, a lot going on, but lastly, on the federal estate tax limits. Listen, federal estate right now, it doesn't affect many people. I think we all have like a $12 million exemption, which means I can die with it or give it away while I'm alive. That's going to get cut in half in 2026 when this thing sunsets. And then who knows what's going to happen after that. What's crazy is I am seeing a lot of people, when you add up all their assets, their 401ks, their IRAs, their house, potential inheritance coming, forecasting where they're going to be in 20 to 30 years. And all of these things that indicate that, yes, you may not think today you have an estate tax problem, but let's forecast this down the road 20 years. Who knows what federal estate tax will be at that moment? You've heard me talk about it. When I started, it was $600,000, went to a million, went to two, went to five, went to 10, went away, went back to five, went back to 10, then doubled to 10, and you know, so it's all over the place. So I'm just saying, even though you look at where you are today, you're saying, well, we don't really have a problem. But let's look in the future. What's going to happen in the future that could cause your estate to grow above $6 million? It includes the death benefit on your life insurance, everything you own, everything, including Roth IRAs, is the only place a Roth doesn't escape when calculating your estate. So I'm telling you right now that if you think you may have an issue down the road, get now with someone that knows what they're talking about, because I can tell you, don't wait until next year in 2025 before this thing sunsets and this $12 million goes to $6 million. The IRS has already said if you do planning now at this $12 million level, you're good. We're not going to claw this thing back. Don't wait till next year, because anyone that knows what they're doing, knows how to do trust work or whatever it is they think you might need to do, they're going to be too daggum busy and very expensive to talk to you. All right, let's take a break. Come back. We'll start to wrap it up. I have this thing called, I love this, and we just kind of created it, stole it, borrowed it, whatever. The 50 things a financial advisor does for you. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, so I'm not going to go through all these because I don't have time. 50 things what a professional financial advisor does for you. But I love number one. You're going to love this. Cares more. It makes me kind of laugh, but it should be this way. Cares more about you and your money than anyone who doesn't share your last name. You like that? Guides you to think about areas of your financial life that you may not have considered. I'm going to skip way down here to reviews your investments in your 401k and 403b for you. Helps you convert your investments to lifetime income if needed. Suggests that taxes, let me move down to taxes. You know, review your tax returns with an eye to possible tax savings in the future, not just today. Stays up to date on tax law changes. Helps you reduce your current taxes. And then lastly, person to person. Proactively keeps in touch with you. Serves as a human glossary of financial terms, such as beta, PE ratios, Sharpe ratios, QCDs, RMDs, all that kind of stuff. Shares the experience of dozens or hundreds of clients who have faced circumstances similar to yours. I have 50 of these things we've lined out, and I'm not afraid to share it with you. So if you'd like to see what you should expect, email us, cfci.us. Contact us. Tell us I want the 50 things. If you want to know more about a registered linked index, indexed annuity, let me know about that. So much we're offering up on this show, as I'm going to take a week off and let Doug sit here in the hot seat as I'm getting my stuff back together. I hope everyone enjoys it. And you know what? Indiana plays tonight. It's a Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I'll be up for the first half. Then I'm going to go to bed. I have a busy day on Friday. But man, I hope they do a good job. I think they will. And then we would have Nebraska after that, and they've had our number. But maybe we get by them, and then you never know. We might be in a title game with Purdue. I'm a super optimistic guy. Maybe Purdue gets beat. That's kind of a long shot, but maybe they do. So all these really optimistic things out of the Hayes corner today. I'm now joining the Smitty corner of optimism when it comes to IU athletics. Have a good one, everyone. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.